Welcome in to the newest edition of the Justin Time Sports Podcast. I am your host, Justin Jackson, and in Season 5, Episode 8, we'll be discussing the NBA and what's going on with the NBA playoffs and touching some offseason stuff. We'll have the WNBA as they're roaring its opening day today. We will have the NFL offseason, some news there, and we will have Jack's hot take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Justin Time Sports Podcast and rate wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, iHeart, wherever you get your podcast, make sure you do that. Hit that subscribe button, hit that rate it if you feel open to it. 5 stars is preferable, but we'll take whatever is your honest opinion. And don't forget to share it as well. You don't, as lastly, do not forget to follow at JTime Sports, which is Social Times, Justin Time Sports social media, sorry, at JTime Sports for all of your updates, your breaking news, updates about the podcast, and etc. And lastly, we have a YouTube show, so don't forget to subscribe to the Justin Time Sports YouTube page. We're going to, again, link it in the episode description, so that way you guys can just hit the button, hit the subscribe button. Make sure you guys run that up. It's greatly appreciated. That way you can see my face and get some kind of not as in-depth. This show is pretty in-depth. The YouTube show is a little lighter. We're usually on with Jai from Hey Jai, so that is something for you to see Justin Time Sports in a different light. But as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in time sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is just a town sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we gon' have adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is just a time sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake. He can never show you fake.
If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you. He gon' tell it to you. He gon' tell it.
This is just in time sports. Come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight. To you straight.
Welcome into the show on a Tuesday, almost noon. It's clock just struck 11:25. We get one of our rare Insta release shows. So for those of you who are fairly new into the program, fairly new into the show, first of all, welcome to the Justin Time Sports family. I am glad that you are here. The show is partnered with IMS Productions. It is produced, well, the audio show by me, but the YouTube show by IMS Productions. And we are excited that you are a part of the Justin Time Sports family. Again, welcome. This is a rare, what I call an Insta release show. So, sort of like how you would see, like, when people do the TV show, like Undisputed, First Take, First Things First, those shows. They will do the TV show, and then within a couple hours, put the audio of the TV show on podcasting. So that way, if you can't watch the TV show, you can get the podcast. You can get the audio version on podcasting networks. It's a very easy way to make more money, because you don't have to re-record anything. You don't have to re-edit anything. What you just take the audio track, it's recorded, and drop it on the podcasting server, divide it by hour in First Safe case, take all the commercials out in First Things First case, and you drop it on audio, and it's an easy way to get more engaged and more streams. Okay, that's effectively an Insta release show. You record it, and within a couple hours, it hits whatever, it hits the airwaves. Great, right? Cool. Most of the time, podcasting, however, unless it's a live recorded show like Nightcap is an Insta release style show, unless it's a live recorded show that you didn't put out, usually podcasting is a day or two ahead, maybe even a week ahead, a couple of weeks ahead, depending on scheduling of people in the show. And then it'll come out a couple weeks later. For instance, JJ Redick and LeBron's Mind the Game pod, they recorded, I believe, episode 6, like 2 weeks before, because LeBron goes 0-30 in the playoffs. So they recorded that episode like 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before it came out. LeBron lost early in the playoffs, so they're able to get back to more current episodes, but he goes 0-30 in the playoffs, so they weren't going to record a pod during the playoffs. He's focused on the playoffs. So therefore, they recorded 2 weeks in advance. Right. This show typically has about a 12-hour return. Usually the night before, I'll record, or the, you know, late afternoon before, I'll record and put it out the next day. So away from the behind-the-scenes stuff, the insta-release show is I'm basically recording and then putting it out. Like, there's no real time between. Like, again, I'm recording this. It's 11:27 now. I'm recording this. It'll be out at 2 p.m. local time, Central Standard Time. Right, so it's a fairly insta-release show. No breaking news should break in the maybe hour or so in between. If so, of course, as always, you know it'll be all over the Just In Time Sports social media. You won't have to worry about that at all. You will know as early as I know. You just may not hear my breakdown of it on the pod. So that may be the only difference between that and Just In Time Sports social media. But unlike a regularly scheduled show, I don't have to do a lot of saying, oh, but this game's going on, so this could change in 2 hours, or this could change tonight, or I'm recording before the games, this is going into the games. Because this show has been recorded, no games are happening. Like I said, it's 11:28 in the morning. Like, no games are happening. Anything I say, even when the pod comes out, will apply to future. You won't have to worry about, oh, like, I can give this amazing point on how I feel like Dallas goes up 3-1. Hypothetically, last night before the game, they blow it, and then now every the 10 minutes after that, it effectively doesn't exist, right? So I don't have to worry about that with this show. So that's one. I love these shows. They're pretty rare, just because I have a full-time job outside of this, right? Like, I coach, I teach, so I don't have the time all the time to do instant release shows. Want to get into them more in the summer. You know, the pods that are coming out 9 a.m., 10 a.m. may start coming out around 2 or 3. So I can do instant release shows. Like on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I can just come in from practice, come right to you guys, drop a show, and then you guys hear it sort of thing. So that's what I'm looking forward to more in the summer. And that's kind of the benefit of the summer. My schedule is a little laxer. I can do a little bit more of the pod stuff, so on and so forth. Anyway, now that I've gotten through all that behind-the-scenes stuff that I hope didn't bore you guys to sleep or have you turn off the pod, let's get into the NBA. So we're going to start off in the West because the West took center stage last night. We're going to start off with the West. The West, to me, is taking center stage in the playoffs in general. But the West took center stage last night. I spoke about 45 seconds ago. Dallas blew it of an epic proportion. Dallas had a chance to put OKC on the ropes. And Oklahoma City, as you all know, is the youngest team in the NBA, like by far. They're the youngest great team in the NBA in a very long time. Their average age was younger than the University of North Carolina's average age was last year. Like, they're really young. And they're going to get younger and younger because, A, the guys are paying these guys for stripping parts off, but B, they got all these draft picks. So Oklahoma City was a really, really young team. They went into that game and, to me, laid an egg. Like, they played poorly. Dallas should have won that game by 15, 20 points, especially with a guy like Kyrie, especially with a guy like Luka, who has that experience. That should have been an easy 15 to 20 point. Dallas is up 3-1, and the young upstart Oklahoma City Thunder just aren't ready yet. You know, and all the narratives change from, oh, they're this great young team and they're going to be around for a long time, to they're not ready yet. And now what do you do contractually? And, you know, it's all this media stuff would start to change in Oklahoma City. Because I know personally, if I would have did this podcast today and Oklahoma City's down 3-1, I would have had a ton of stuff about the salary cap table. What do you do?
You're not that far from a Jay Dub extension. You're not that far from a Jay Will extension. What do you do about Josh Giddey? What do you do about building around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? What do you do about building around with Chet Holmgren? Like, you just start going through, like, how do you get a vet wing? How do you do this? What do you do with Lou Dort? Et cetera. Like, there were so many different storylines that Oklahoma City is going to have to deal with over the next few days if they would have lost game four. Dort played like crap. Josh Giddey played like crap. Chet Holmgren wasn't good for the vast majority of it. SGA was a baller. J-Dub was a baller. But some of those guys offensively played like absolute amateurs. And, like, that would have been a problem because you would have kept bringing in these high draft picks, kept bringing in this talent, kept bringing in all these guys, and the guys you had on the team didn't deliver. It would be SGA and guys. And that's a hard way to live. SGA and guys is a hard, hard way to live. Ask Luka when it was pretty much him and Brunson, who was not the Brunson we see now. It was Brunson, like, it was just, Brunson was a regular guy. He was a pretty good six man, but he wasn't the superstar level guy we see now. It was a lot of work when you ran against the team. And so, again, man, Oklahoma City laid an egg. Like, they were bad. It kind of reminds me of them Pelicans games where, like, two of them, Oklahoma City didn't break 100. And like, if the Pelicans had half-decent offense, the Pels would have went to game 5, 2-2, and who knows what happens. But instead, Dallas blows it, shoots awful from the free throw line. Like, at one point, they were 10 of 20. Like, late in the fourth quarter, they were 10 of 20. I think they were finishing right above 50%. They were awful from the free throw. In the game, they lost by single digits. You missed at 11-12 free throws. Luka missed a couple of coming down the stretch. You know, like, they were bad. Kyrie Irving was bad offensively by his standard. And it's not like the Oklahoma City defense was like that. Yes, they have Lou Dort, who is allowed to play football on a basketball court. I saw it in round one with Brandon Ingram. He basically defended Ingram out of the city of New Orleans. I'm seeing it now with Luka. It's not so bad that God, Sham God, is like grabbing on Luka pregame to kind of just get him used to, like, yeah, you're going to get grabbed, you're going to get pushed, you're going to get hit, you're going to get battled. Like, it reminds me, and somebody referenced Legion of Boom, and I just actually, right after that, seen a highlight of them. It's pretty weird. But somebody, it reminds me of when the Heat basically went layup or foul, or to go the other way, when the Ravens of the 2000s were just knocked people out of the game. And I'm going to go oldest to newest. So Ravens 2000s basically dared the refs, called the flag. And that's what the Legion of Boom did. We're going to hit you harder. We're going to hit you high. We're going to hit you late. We're going to grab you. We're going to pull you. We're going to PI. We're going to do everything you can. We're going to make the ref call it every single time. Because the one time you don't, we're going to capitalize on it. And so we're willing to eat 3 to 4 personal fouls a game because we're going to play such, everybody's going to do it on our defense to where either the ref gets desensitized or he just literally, you can't call that many penalties. It's sort of like when Shaq complained to the late, great David Stern about how he doesn't get the calls. He's like, I get beat up. And David Stern was like, dude, if we gave you every foul, the game would be 4 hours. Like, you would shoot free throws all game. So, because of which, you get an advantage if you just say, screw it. I'm going to play hella physical, and I'm going to make them call the fouls. Because I know you're not. Not all of them. And then the ones you don't, I'm going to take advantage of. And so, he's beating on Luka. He's hanging on Luka, Lou Dort is. And it's just like, he's getting really physical with him. Luka's a bigger body than Brandon Ingram, so he's accepting it a little bit better. He's also a better ball handler and a better shooter, better player. He's a little bit more accepting of the physical play that Lou Dort's employing. His body's a little bit better built for it. And it's just, they played, P.J. Washington was playing out of his mind again. You had Derek Lively flying all around the gym. Sam Hardaway had a couple of big ones. Kyrie played poorly and Luka missed free throws down the stretch. And Oklahoma City escapes. Like, there was no way entering that fourth quarter, I was think, yeah, Oklahoma City's gonna win this game. And they were playing awful, right? And even when they felt like they got momentum, Luka would hit a three. P.J. Washington would hit one. Like, somebody would do something and they'd be like, okay, no, no, no. Like not yet. Like, you know, I see what you want to do, but not yet, right? And at no point would my brain have accepted the fact that Oklahoma City was going to win that game, but they did. So huge kudos to them. Now Dallas has a major problem on their hands. They've lost home court. Now they got to win another one in Oklahoma City, which people tell you all the time is a bad place to play. And if anybody, if you're a fan of a team that's had to go through them for something, you know it's a no. Like, you know Oklahoma City is a pain in the butt to win a game in. And so now you're Dallas. You have to go win a game in there again. Do I think Luke and Kyrie can get it done? Yes. Do I think Luke and Kyrie will get it done? Yes. Do I think they end the series in six? Yes. I think they're the better team, but it would not shock me if Oklahoma City win in seven because now they can sit on their home court. You know, now I can lean on my star. I can lean on my fans. I can lean on my support. I can lean on whatever because I know for a fact I got two of the three home games. I got two or three games at home. I know that. I don't have to win a game outside of the building the rest of the playoffs on the West. I don't have to win a game outside of Oklahoma City. I'm good. And so that is something that has to be eating at Dallas. It's the kind of loss, it's the kind of monumental loss that you don't sleep after. That you just sit up all night thinking, what just happened? What did we do? And how does this affect us? And your brain just plays it over and over and over again because you were supposed to go to bed. You were supposed to fly back to Oklahoma City on the jet, smiling and laughing. We're up 3-1, and we're a game away from the Western Conference Finals. And those young guys over there are panicking because they went from never losing a playoff game 4-0 to they've lost three of their next four. Like, they're panicking, right? And Sage on their private plane going, what the just happened? Like, all the momentum's in Oklahoma City now. All the mental fortitude's in OKC now. If I'm, Mark Daigneault? I'm basically saying, like, look, they threw their haymaker at us. We threw a, I wouldn't even call it a jab. We threw a range check punch. Just like when you throw the hand out, just check the range. And we connected, and now we're tied 2-2. Like, it's just insane, that game itself. And Dallas absolutely blew it. So if Dallas loses the series, you can point to this game 4 as the deciding point in the series. Shifting over to the Denver Nuggets and Minnesota Timberwolves, there's a phrase, right? There's a popular phrase in basketball, in the NBA. And it's an older phrase, but my basketball heads would know, or they'll recognize it. A series doesn't start until someone loses at home, right? That's when a series starts. And that's when, and the reason why it's not like that, everybody holds home court, kind of who got home court last. Like, it's a series, but, you know, kind of who got home court last. You steal a game, now it gets interesting. Because now you got to steal at least one back in order to, you know, get it back. It gets interesting at that point. But the phrase is, a series doesn't start until someone loses at home. Question. What happens when everybody loses at home? Because so far, the Denver Nuggets Timberwolves series, everybody's lost at home. Every single game, the road team has won. All four contests in their series, the road team has won. Minnesota went to Denver and won games 1 and 2. Then Denver went to Minnesota and won games 3 and 4. I don't think I've ever seen a series like that. Or if I have seen it, like if I was alive for it, I don't remember it. With me, I didn't follow it closely. Like, this is insanity. And it's not like they were buzzer beaters. Like, you knew with like 2 minutes left, road team won. Like, Denver smoked Minnesota in game 3. Timberwolves smoked Denver in game 2 when Game and Gobert missed for his kid. It was insane, but I'm thinking. And it just hit me. I don't have this written down. It just hit me. Remember the Mind the Game podcast I spoke about earlier? I watched that, and I watched it, right? And I watch it to learn basketball terminology. Like, if you watch basketball long enough, you kind of can get different things. You kind of know what you're looking for, what you're calling something different. So it's like a basketball head. They'll say it different. A basketball coach, they'll say it differently. You're talking about the same thing. For instance, the Warriors run a play where Draymond get the ball in the post area, and they'll set like two kind of screens, stagger looking screens, and Klay come around and knock it down. I call it the Warriors play. Like, I knew what it was. Like, Jay go ball to Draymond, a couple screens get set, Klay pops up wide open, like in the wing area, wide open for three. It was the most annoying thing ever. Or Steph would run and he'd end up at the top of the key by himself. Ridiculous, right? Apparently, that's called post splits, right? Like, or when LeBron was really good at slashing to the goal from the wing and dunking on a pass, it's called a slot cut. Like, there's things I'm learning from the podcast, right, that I would not have known. Okay, cool. I say all that to say, they spoke about it in the pod, and LeBron was saying one of the things he and stuff he's gone through. He referenced the Warriors on Andre Iguodala. He's referenced his own series. Series where the team loses the game, but they'll gather information. And even in the loss, they'll win. Right? Like, even in the loss, they'll win. So, they may lose that individual game, but they'll win the series based on the info they'll gather in the game. So, like, LeBron referenced how at the end it was the Warriors series with Steph in them first title, where he's basically solo dolo with him and Matthew Dellavedova. Shout out Deli. The end of game three, they put Iguodala in the game. Iguodala had barely played most of the playoffs, not really a key rotation guy for them. He comes in the game. I forgot why he was in the game. He comes in the game later in the game. The game is decided. Cavs are going to win. Whatever. Iguodala slows down LeBron. Like, he doesn't stop him. But at that point, LeBron was inhumanly unstoppable. Iguodala made him slightly unhuman unstoppable. But it was enough to where the Warriors closed the gap. Like, it would. If it was a 20-point game, the Warriors ended up losing by 10. And it kind of happened when Iggy comes in the game. Steve Kerr starts Iggy game 4, 5, and 6. Warriors win games 4, 5, and 6. They're the NBA champions, right? Cool. LeBron referenced a series where he's gathered information and losses of a series where he figured out something at the end of a game. Game's over. But when they installed it in the next game, it completely took over the game and ended up winning the series, right? Rudy Gobert missing game two may have cost the Timberwolves the series. And you're thinking, what does that have to do with the stories you just told? Well, I'm glad you asked. Rudy Gobert, despite the slander I and a lot of others give him, he's actually a really, really good defensive player. Is he 4-time Defensive Player of the Year good? No. Should this defensive player of the year go on to Victor Wembanyama? Absolutely. Should Rudy Gobert be considered one of the greatest defensive players in NBA history? No. But is he good at his job? Yes, he's a great help side defender, good rim protector, whatever. But he's actually pretty rangy on the perimeter. And the way they've designed their schemes, what he does, nobody else on the team can really do. So, here's what I'm saying. He covers up the gaps. Like, you're so not worried about him, but you know he's there. So you do your best to kind of just don't run right at him. Like, he's still standing there, right? Cool. What makes the Timberwolves defense work is their hard perimeter defense and Gobert help side. So you can't really find the slots and the angles and the gaps because Gobert is backside. So even if you get through it, he blocks it, and it's like, oh, well, okay, that's not really there. Cool, or mentally is what you think. When you miss game two, that rim now became Nas Reed or Karl Anthony Towns. So now those gaps that you think you saw, or now really open. So now you're just getting to the rim at will. You're getting to defense. You're making a rotate. You're doing whatever you need to do in order to be successful. You figure out ways to beat the defense and the scheme. So even when Gobert comes back, you take your chances doing it that way because you figure you can't get to everything, which you can't. And so the Nuggets, in a game they lost, gathered a ton of information on the Wolves and how to beat them. In a game they lost, employed it, and has beaten them games 3 and 4. So they were able to gather information. Rudy Gobert, I'm not going to debate or comment on the decision of whether he should have played game 2 juxtaposed to the birth of his child. According to head coach Chris Finch, he was going to be back for the game. Travel issues arose. He just said, screw it. But, you know, you got guys saying that, man, there's no way I would have left my team during the playoff run. And, you know, my girl, I would not have done it. I won't comment on that. It's not my place. It affected on the court, but that's all I'm gonna go as far as doing it. I'm not gonna talk about the morality of Rudy Gobert. It may come up in the JTS After Dark, but with Jai from Hey Jai, but it will not come up on this show. Right? Cool. But Gobert missing, however, did allow for the Nuggets to find stuff
that previously they were unable to truly track down and be able to take advantage of. And I just want to apologize for the audio issues. We're having some technical difficulties. I had a microphone situation happen mid-show, so I'm not sure how much of it sounds like I'm 30 feet away, but because it's picking up off the laptop or microphone and not the actual mics in my hand. But I believe the issues are solved. I'm getting a thumbs up from my production team, so we should be good there. But regardless, right? Gobert missed and it allowed the Nuggets to find stuff. Now that they've found stuff, Gobert really can't cover up all the holes they found. Because of which, the Nuggets look like the championship team they did against the Lakers and for most of the season. They were resilient. They fought. They battled. They went to war. They did everything they could in order to tie the series back. Now they send it back to Denver. They have the momentum. Excuse me. They have the momentum. The Timberwolves back against the wall. And they really, think about it. The Timberwolves' first two losses in the playoffs were the last two games. They won their first six. They had to be feeling fairly invincible. And then now you lost to one you were pretty handled in. Like, what do you do mentally if you're the Minnesota Timberwolves? Oh, that's going to be interesting there. Jumping to the East. I won't spend a lot of time on this series. The Boston Celtics are handling the Cleveland. The Boston Celtics are handling the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're taking advantage of them in every single way. Donovan Mitchell's amazing. He's the only reason it's not a sweep. And the Celtics have been on cruise control through most of this series. Brown and Tatum have been the best two Celtics with no Porzingis. They've made it work with Al Horford and Derek White, et cetera. But they are handling the Cleveland Cavaliers. They said they're up 3-2-1. And lastly, the interesting series in the East, the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. This feels very 1990. We're going all the way back. Celtics and Cavs and Knicks and Pacers. This is giving 1995 in the NBA, right? And so when you look at the Knicks and Pacers series, this is a series that could be 3-1 either way. To me, the Pacers had their shots in game one in order to win the game and to take commanding lead in the series. Vice versa, if Indiana misses that bomb, I think it was Nembhard, but I don't want to quote it, or Naismith, misses that bomb off the pass from Halliburton, the Knicks are up 3-1 right now. Like, so that is just how close the series has been. The Knicks are in an all-time battle
not all time bad, but they're in an elite battle with the team again after the epic showdown they had with the Philadelphia 76ers, in which all six games totaled to a 1-point difference. Well, they're not in a series like that this time, but they are in an absolute war with Indiana just smoking them in game four. The Knicks are beat to hell, and they're just trying to battle. Indiana, not supposed to be here, supposed to be Philly. And yeah, they continue to battle. I mean, Indiana supposed to be here. Milwaukee. It was supposed to be Milwaukee, actually, not Indiana. And they are battling at literally every station, every section, every moment, just trying to keep up. They are going to war, and like I say, in a situation they shouldn't be in. The Indiana Pacers, was kudos to them, Rick Carlisle, Tyrese Haliburton, Miles Turner, Obi Toppin, and the rest of the crew as they continue to battle the New York Knicks. All right, quick hitters. This NBA segment's gone 27 odd minutes. So, quick hitters. Donovan Mitchell appears to be done in Cleveland. There's a whole lot of smoke regarding to this being his last. There's a whole lot of smoke regarding this being his last run at with the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron was back in Cleveland last night with Savannah and Rich Paul. Could there be an imminent return looming? Could he be returning and keeping Donovan Mitchell with him? What's that all about? Last time LeBron did an impromptu pop up in Cleveland, it was before he left the Heat and went back to Cleveland, right? So he did it this time again with his wife Savannah and agent Rich Paul. So keep an eye on that situation. But back to Donovan Mitchell, he missed last night's game with a sprained ankle. Yeah, in the playoffs. So unless he could barely walk, I don't know why you missed the playoff game unless you decided, I'm done with this, I don't want to prolong it. Speaking of LeBron, Bronny is going to expect to stay in the NBA draft. He did his official, unofficial, he's official height and weight. Without shoes, he's 6'1", with 210 pounds. And I think 6'7" arms. However, he did show pretty well in NBA Combine, including making 19 of 25 in the three-point star drill, although his shot is noticeably slow. Like, he needs to speed that up. Congratulations, I guess, to the Atlanta Hawks for winning, I guess, the NBA draft lottery. They had basically no chance of doing it. Yet they vault all the way up to the number one spot in the weakest draft, arguably ever. I mean, I'm talking worse than the Anthony Bennett draft. At least Anthony Bennett draft had Otto Porter. Like, it's a rough draft. It is an awful, awful, awful draft. And so if you're a GM, if I'm the Hawks, I'll have to trade that pick immediately. And the Hawks have the choice to make. You want to try and put somebody around Trae Young, or do you want to trade Trae Young to, let's say, New Orleans, pick up additional picks? Like, there's so many options that the Atlanta Hawks have, and I think that's why he was celebrating. He was celebrating the possibility of options, because it definitely wasn't the first pick. And the Lakers head coach search is being aided by legendary Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski, and pretty much it's come down to three names: James Borrego, who is on the New Orleans Pelicans staff, Sam Cassell, and J.J. Redick, the co-host of the Mind the Game pod with LeBron James. So take that as you wish. But up next, we're going to discuss the WNBA as they come to opening day. Welcome back into the show, and welcome into the WNBA regular season. I'm excited. I'm a fan of the W. Legitimately, I'm not one of these people that showed up. If you guys listen to my podcast, I was talking about the W in season one. Like, I'm legitimately a WNBA fan. I simply say the W. Like, I don't say the WNBA often. I just say the W. Like, but I'm a legitimate fan of the W. I'm a legitimate supporter of the W. Whatever coinage, terminology, phrasing you want to use, I'm it. right? I'm a fan. I invest in League Pass every year. Like, I'm a fan. I bought my wife custom jerseys. Like, I'm in this thing, right? I'm sad because it's the first year since I've begun watching the WNBA. I won't have any relation to Candace Parker at all. I'm hoping that the Sparks, the Sky, and possibly the Aces give her a night where she can kind of bounce around and kind of get her flowers. Knowing Candace, she probably will say no, but I'm at least at first. But I'm hoping that she gets some love this season. But out with the old and with the new, right? And so the WNBA is entering their 28th season. I kind of love the WNBA because always me plus one. I just turned 27. The WNBA is turning 28. So whatever the WNBA, whoever I am, it's me plus one, regardless of what the season's going to be. Whatever my age is during the summer, that's what they are, plus one. It's pretty dope. It's kind of the same thing as my parents' wedding anniversary. Whatever I am, plus one. And so the W's entering their 28th season. It's all kind of great news going on. And they open tonight with four games, all on the ESPN Family Networks, either on ESPN2 or on the Watch ESPN app. Mercury and Aces, with the defending champion Aces, the two-time defending champion Aces. Brittany get kind of an easier intro to their season. Brittany Griner's out. Of course, she missed most of last season with the incident in Russia. And then, of course, she's out now. I think it's wrist surgery that she had to undergo. She'll miss the beginning of the season. Hopefully, she's back by the Olympics. Because we kind of need her in the blocks for a multitude of reasons. But so she's out for the beginning of the season. Aces should probably roll early in the year, right? They're the best team in the league. They're bet even money to win the WNBA title. And they're the best team in the world. And we're going to discuss the WNBA GM survey. They got most of the awards, right? Like, they're the best team in the WNBA. Lynx versus Storm. Now, the Lynx have rebuilt really nicely during this offseason with some key acquisitions. But, of course, everybody's there to see the Storm. Now, I mean, the Lynx have some players, right? It's the WNBA. Everybody has some players. But the Storm, also referencing the WNBA survey, got a lot of love. But they have a new big three. They have Nneka Ogumike, Skylar Diggins-Smith, and Jewel Lloyd. That is legitimately a big three. The NBA... it's kind of leaving the big three era. The WNBA is in it. The W is in it full blown, right? And so the Storm boasts Nneka Ogumike, Skylar Diggins, Smith, and Jewel Lloyd. You have one of the best post players in league history, one of the most efficient scorers in league history, and Nneka Ogumike, a champion of finals MVP. You have Skylar Diggins-Smith, one of the better point guards in the league, one of the more controversial people in the league as well, but she's always a good point floor general. And you have Jewel Lloyd, one of the best scorers, if not the best scorer in the WNBA. She's legitimate. She's crucial. You see her on the State Farm ad, on the house she's dribbling. That's Jewel Lloyd, for those who don't know. She is an absolute bucket. So much fun to watch. She's 22-23 a night. In a league where the average score is around 85-90. So she's legitimate score. She's a bucket to watch. And her assists, her buckets this year should come a little bit easier with a legitimate point guard in Skylar Diggins-Smith. And Nneka Ogumike can't hold down the block. She should have all the space in the world to operate for her shot. The New York Liberty, last year's runner-up, coached by Sandy Brondello, versus the Washington Mystics. Kind of a franchise looking to bounce back. They never really truly recovered from, for lack of a better term, the failed Deladon experiment. So Deladon was in Chicago. She ends up in Washington, and then she kind of just stops playing basketball. And so the Mystics never really have recovered from that. They now have Aaliyah Edwards out of UConn, so hopefully she could be their catalyst and their cog to restart the franchise. But they're going against the Liberty. Not the best intro. You know, like Diana Taurasi's in Phoenix, probably on her last ride, and her intro without her center and Brittany Griner is the Aces, right? With the best coach and the best player and the best point guard and all the other stuff they won WNBA GM in the WGM survey. Like, that's an awful way to begin, like, right? And so the Liberty, the Mystics, trying to reboot their franchise, get the Liberty. That's an awful awful way to begin, right? Like, you get Sandra Brondolo on the bench with Sabrina Ionescu's Brianna Stewart and Jonquel Jones, you know, as the big three coming in town. That's an awful way to start your season. And, of course, the game everybody's waiting on. The game is going to – it's sold out. It's on ESPN2. People are saying it could be finals-like coverage with the amount of media and cameras and attention and broadcasting and pregame show and on location. And it's the Caitlin Clark show. It's arriving into the WNBA finally full-fledged. Her first regular season game. She goes against the Connecticut Sun, who's got some players. Like, the Connecticut Sun has some players. They have DeJuana Bonner. They have Alyssa Thomas. You know, they have several other players. So Jonquel Jones came from. Think about it. They had Jonquel Jones, who was the MVP of the league. They trade her to the New York Liberty, and they don't really miss a beat. So that kind of tell you what the Connecticut Sun are all about in terms of they are legit. Like I said, DeJuana Bonner, Brianna Jones, they have Alyssa Thomas, they have DeJuana Carrington. Like, they have a squad, Mariah Jefferson, Tiffany Mitchell. Like, they can play. That's one of the things I like about the W. Everybody on the roster can play. So you're not really going to get people who are just bad. You're going to get people who can ball. And so love that for the W. Caitlin's going to have to ball in her first game. She has not done it so far, which is not what the media would like you to believe. And I'm a huge WNBA fan, so I follow these things. I'm not just looking at her box score of 21-6-4. I'm looking at the fact she shot 5-13. I'm looking at the fact she shot 4-12. She's shooting awful. She's making 3 or 4 threes a night, but she's shooting 12-13 of them. And so, in her first game, she made her first 4, and then she finished 2 of 11. I think she ended up going, 6 of 17. And then in the second game, she goes, 4 of 12. Like, she's not shooting very well at all. She's shooting around 35-ish% from the field. Like, that's not going to work. Now, she's shooting so much, and the Fever have kind of capitulated to her play style. Like, her shot in the miss is better than somebody else's shot in the miss, especially from the perimeter. But she's going to have to get way more efficient and have a counter move. Like, she wants to go left. And I said it when she was in college. Dawn Staley beat her because in the end of the first quarter, Raven Johnson was switched onto Caitlin Clark and sat on Caitlin Clark's left hand. I don't care about that screen. I don't care about nothing. I'm making you go right. You're not going to go left. And Caitlin Clark was way more inefficient. She wants those fading bombs from three going left. She prefers to go left. If you make her go right, she's either a drive artist or she's an assist person. At that point, you're very normal. And there was even a clip that was shown where she went right and stopped, like completely stopped, and basically shot a set shot from the mid-range. It went in, but you could tell it was an incredibly uncomfortable moment. She didn't jump into it. Like, she literally stopped and, like, flat-footed, shot a shot, basically. And it goes in. Good shot, but it's not going to work in a game, in a full-speed game situation. But, you know, I'm not, and my friends have called me a hater. It's fine. Call me what you want. I watched this game, right? Like, I watched this game closely. People called Anna Taurasi a hater and Stu a hater and all the older WNBA players, the legends, the walking statues that were saying, oh, she's going to have a rough time when she comes. She is. Like, people had no problem talking about Ames Reese is going to struggle in the WNBA because, oh, she's 6'4". She's only 6'4", and she has no jump shot, and the bigger WNBA players are going to really bother Angel Reese, and she's going to struggle. That's why she fell in the draft to number 7, blah, 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 blah. Even though the WNBA, even though the WGM say that was the best value pick in the draft, Angel Reese at 7. Like, you got Angel Reese at 7. People had no issue slandering Angel Reese and saying that she was going to struggle with her shot and her efficiency. She's not going to just get all those rebounds because the WNBA is bigger and stronger and it was women. instead of, you know, 18, 19-year-old girls, she's playing women. That was never a problem, right? That was never an issue. And which, in fact, her game has translated incredibly well. She's still getting those rebounds. She's still jumping over people. She's still talking trash. She's still blocking shots. She's still laying up through contact. Her game hadn't changed much, right? Like, now she showed in off-season workouts she can shoot it a little bit, but her game is her game, right? It hasn't changed much, especially because she finished playing high college basketball in the March. She's playing her first pro game in the middle of May, right? Like, so she hadn't had a lot of time to really change the game, you know? But yet, when veterans and people who watch the game and pundits and the occasional fan dare to say Caitlin won't just be able to abuse a 5'4" guard who's never going to make it to the WNBA or even play professional basketball, she's not going to just be able to take 30 shots. Like, she won't just be able to just say, oh, I shot 2-for-10 in the first half, so I'm going to shoot 20 in the second half, shoot myself out of it. Like, that's not going to work, right? But when anybody said that, we were immediately, hey, oh, y'all hating. No one's ever seen anything like her. She could be the female GOAT. Blah, blah, blah. Like, Breanna Stewart, who won 4 national championships and 3 Player of the Year awards, had to adjust. Maya Moore had to adjust. Brittany Griner had to adjust. Like, I'm not saying Caitlin Clark won't ever be good. I'm not saying she won't come in and average 18, 6, and 7. You know what I'm saying? And just... and Fever lose, but in any efficient 18, 6, and 7. Like, you could just, like, I'm not saying that won't happen. What I'm saying is, she won't walk in the door and be one of the best 30 players in the league. Like, okay. All right. She won't be one of the best 25 players in the league. Like, she's not the best player on her own team. That's Aaliyah Boston. Like, she wouldn't be the best player on any WNBA team right now. Maybe the Mystics? Like, if she went to the Mystics, she might be the unquestioned best player. But, like, she would not be the best player in Phoenix. Let's look at the teams that plays today. Like, let's not even worry about, you know, teams that don't play today. Look at the teams that play today. Like, I'm looking at the Mystics roster. She'd be the best player on the Mystics. Because the only other person I think of true that would challenge her, Aaliyah Edwards, who I think she's better than, maybe Ariel Atkins. So she'd be the best player on the Mystics. But the Mercury, Dana Tross is better. Brittany Griner is better. Kalia Copper, right this second, probably better. Las Vegas Aces, let's move on. They have Asia Wilson. The Minnesota Lynx have Nafisa Collier. I'm going to take Nafisa Collier. The Storm have NECA, Sky, and Jewel. I'm going to take Jewel and NECA. The Liberty have Sabrina, Stewie, and Jonquil. I'm going to take all three. The Mystics, okay. The Fever, Aaliyah Boston's better. And Connecticut, Alyssa Thomas is better, at least. So when you go through these teams, that's the team that's playing today. She's already at 13, 14, and the league's only have 144 players. You know, I'm not thinking about the Sparks. She's probably the best player on the Sparks. I think, Cameron Brink does more. Like, I'm not saying she won't be good. And for all I know, she could go out tonight and have 27, 7, and 10 assists, hit, you know, 8 of 12 threes, and it's just this bonanza. She gets a 40-footer. Like, it could be an absolute show tonight on ESPN2 in front of the world, sold out crowd, everybody's watching. It could be a show. And she could also get 15, 4, and 5 on 5 of 18 shooting, and they could lose by 20. Because, again, the Sun is a good team. Like, I just want stuff to be rational. I just want stuff to make sense. The Caitlin Clark coverage is not making sense. You're not making sense. Because what you say about one, you don't say about the other. You say that Angel Reese is going to struggle translating. People wonder about Camila Cardoza not having post game. People wondered about Cameron Brink being scared. Like, everybody had a worry except for Caitlin Clark, who didn't beat any of them. Like, so... it would be remiss of me to just simply say, oh, she's going to walk in the league and tear it up. That's the common phrase, number one. Number two, it's not necessarily true. Number three, even the highlight package they show you, every time I put up the old box score, everybody go, golly, she shot bad. They made it on TV look like she didn't miss. Exactly. Charles Barkley spoke about that on Club Shay Shay. How he did it in reference by Rudy Gobert gets slandered. But it was kind of like, in a two-hour game, the highlight package is 1 minute. So whoever the star is going to get 40 seconds of the minute. Good or bad. Whoever the star is. So for the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards and Kat are going to get 45 seconds of the highlight reel. So the other 15 seconds is sprinkled in with Gobert dunk, a big block, maybe a pull-up three. Like, that's the highlight package. For the Nuggets, it's a lot of Jokic, a lot of Murray, a lot of Michael Porter Jr. Maybe an Aaron Gordon dunk. That's the highlight package. For the Fever, if Caitlin Clark made six shots, five of them are going to be in the highlight reel. Aaliyah Boston's going to be mentioned, like, and that's the highlight. So when she shot 4 for 4 early, bang, 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 I'm like, okay, she came in hitting. And then she finished 2 of 11. Right? So, and then people were talking to me like, man, I thought she didn't miss. You would have thought that looking at the highlight package. And I'm not a Caitlin Clark hater. I'm a Caitlin Clark realist. I spoke about her inefficiency in college, and people came at me. And I'm saying, I'm not just thinking about, I see the number, but I watch the game. And I'm noticing when she's not going left, she's horrible. Not horrible, but she's not nearly the player that, A, she's hyped to be. She's not that either. But that she is going left. Going left, you get the 35-foot bombs. You get the 30-foot bombs. You get the come around the screen over somebody's shot because she's comfortable going left. She's really comfortable going left. Going right, yeah. So that is something I noticed and looked at, and I was called a hater. So guess what? And I said it, she's going to have to deal with it in the WNBA. I said most teams in college don't have the personnel. They just don't. And that's why, like, men college basketball stars, sometimes a good bit of time, don't make it in the NBA. Because a lot of times they're either just physically more gifted or they have a way better coach. It's not the case in college. Like, she's a 6-foot guard in college who can dribble and shoot 30-foot threes. That's something that, especially when giving the ultra green light, it's hard to stop in college. Most people don't have WNBA level players. Guess what? In the WNBA, they're all WNBA level players. Like, she's going against the Sun. Alyssa Thomas is going to have some shots at her. Dawn Bonner is going to have some shots at her. Like, she won't just be able to just walk herself into these shots. And the two teams that she played in her first couple preseason games and didn't play all that well weren't necessarily lockdown teams. They weren't. Like, they weren't teams that was just, oh my God, they're going to lead the league in defense. Like, probably not. Like, DeAndre Carrington's going to have her shot at her. Rachel Barnum's going to have her shot at her. Tiffany Mitchell's for sure going to have her shot at her. Tiffany Mitchell's one of the best defensive players in the W. Like, and when you just look at that, like, you're going to have to work in the W. You're not going to just calmly jack up 30 shots. You're not going to get 30 shots anyway against a professional basketball team. Like, you're going to have to go to work there. Caitlin Clark's going to have to prove herself. I think she'll be a good player. I think she'll make a lot of all-star teams. I think she'll make a couple all-NBAs, a couple all-W teams. Like, I think she'll be a legitimate number one pick. I do. I don't see her being a bust. But I will say that she's going to have to deal with a lot of scrutiny. If you look up, she's inefficient, which I believe she will be, and Indiana's 7-17. What do you do at that point? The coach probably gets fired. The GM might not be but far behind. If Aaliyah Boston not putting up big numbers, it's going to be looking at Aaliyah Boston. Oh, Caitlin Clark needs more help. She got that bum Aaliyah Boston. So now how does Aaliyah Boston feel? There's a new franchise opening up. I am sure the Valkyrie would love to have Aaliyah Boston. Like, me and my wife were talking about that earlier. Like, what if Indiana succumbs to public pressure or whatever and lets Aaliyah Boston be unprotected in the fantasy draft? Is Aaliyah Boston a Valkyrie? You know, like, is Aaliyah Boston a Valkyrie? They're going to have the number one pick, I believe. That's how the WNBA are doing it. They're going to draft Paige Beckers. So if the Valkyrie can show up with Paige Beckers and Aaliyah Boston, they're immediately legitimate. Like, so that's, you know, a lot of stuff's got to happen, and it's a long WNBA season, longer than normal. They have the Olympic break. We'll talk about that when it gets closer, how that kind of works with them. It's kind of like the bubble break, but much shorter. Like a super long All-Star break. Like for two weeks. Or I think it's 3 weeks, I think. The season just pauses. It's like a super long All-Star break. Because I think they fly. I think the whole basketball tournament in the NBA is, the Olympics is 10 days, 14 days. So for like 2.5, 3 weeks, the league just pauses. And then they come back and the season picks up. Odd thing. But whatever. But we're definitely keeping an eye on the Caitlin Clark game tonight. I will be watching. Everybody's going to be watching. I will be watching it closely. Very, very closely. And you will hear my thoughts on it probably right after the game. We'll definitely see that. We'll see what happens on X. We'll keep your eye posted on my social medias. And I mentioned them already. Expansions coming to the WNBA. The Golden State franchise that was announced a while back have their name and their colors and the logo. They will be the Golden State Valkyrie. Valkyrie is mentioned in Marvel. Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie. But traditionally in Norse mythology, Viking mythology, they are the choosers of the dead, basically. Or the guiders of the dead. Their whole job as a Valkyrie is to carry the good people up to Odin. And the land, wherever the Viking word is. But the Viking heaven, basically. Up to Odin, that was the Valkyrie's job. Ushered the soul up. And so that's what they're named after. But also, in more modern times, you see, like I said, in Marvel, they're deemed as warriors. Like, the Valkyries fight female warriors. What are the Golden State men's team called? The Warriors. It's very, like, you see that a lot of times with teams that are linked together, that they'll name kind of off the other team. For instance, the Los Angeles Sparks started into the Showtime Lakers. The Seattle. Oh, I'm trying to think of somebody else. Somebody else is linked in. In the early days, it was the Charlotte Sting was the WNBA franchise for the Charlotte Hornets. I'm trying to think. It's another one too, and I'm drawing a blank, and it's upsetting. But the Minnesota Lynx. Lynx is a kind of a softer term for wolf. You know what I'm saying? Like, these teams are kind of linked in together for those of them who are partnered up. And so obviously. The Golden State franchise owned by Joe Lacob and crew are partnered up with the men's franchise, so the Warriors now have their sister team, the Valkyrie. A dope logo. I post all over social media if you want to see it. Then the Toronto WNBA franchise don't have their branding, don't have their name, but they've been awarded a franchise in 2026. Kathy Engelbert wants to go to 16 teams by 2028, which means that is kind of the sweet spot number. She's thinking 16. I say the sweet spot number is 18 or 20, because 16 teams, play everybody twice, 30 games, and then kind of randomize the last 6 games, so for 36 games. 18 teams, play everybody twice, that's 34 games, and then you have 2 teams you play twice, 36 games. Or you get like 20 teams, you play everybody twice, that's 38 games, and you unconference the playoffs like it is now, and you don't have to worry about none of the other nonsense, whatever. And then there's reportedly 20 viable cities wanting to host teams anyway. So give everybody a team. Expand, kind of do a pop expansion. It'd be crazy draft. But give everybody a team, pop expansion, and see where it goes. But she's smartly, she's getting good ownership, she's getting good cities, she's doing one at a time. So we're going to get you seeing the Golden State Valkyrie, then we're going to get you seeing the Toronto Whatevers, and then we're going to have 2 more teams, 1 in 27, I assume, and 1 in 28. Maybe we get another one, but I know she want to kind of keep it even. But she's doing a great job as commissioner. I've had my issues with Kathy Engelbert in the past, but I'm starting to kind of learn it's not really her. It's kind of the old ownership groups not really allowing her to maneuver the way she probably wants to as the commissioner. Does work, however, for the owners, which is something that NFL fans still haven't quite figured out. Honestly. But up next, we're shifting to the NFL and touching on what's going down there. Oh, wait. I almost forgot about the WNBA survey. I was like talking so much, I almost forgot about the survey. Okay, it's weird on my notes. So the WNBA had a GM survey that all the sports leagues do it, but some interesting things that went down. So by position, I don't really best small forward is irrelevant. It didn't matter. But best center was Asia Wilson, followed by Jonquil Jones and Brittany Griner. Best power forward was Breonna Stewart, followed by Asia Wilson and Satu Sabale. Best point guard was Chelsea Gray, who cares who was second. Best shooting guard was Jewel Lloyd, again, who cares who was in second. The best total offseason was the end of the Seattle Storm. Remember I spoke about that is the team that ends up with Nneka Ogumike, Skylar Diggins, and Jewel Lloyd. I mean, that's, you know, ridiculous. That's insane, right? That's insane. For those of you who want to know, the best small forward was Satu Sabale, but she only won 25% of her vote. That's why I said the other positions were kind of more solidified. Satu only won 25% of her vote, but she is deemed as the best small forward in the W. Best coach was Becky Hammon. And then most improved team was the Indiana Fever, basically because of Caitlin Clark. But the Aces, we don't touch on this, was the Aces kind of swept. Not swept, but they dominated the awards. And there was some other stuff like who winning. Well, I would say the Aces dominated the awards. For instance, the Aces won best defensive team, most fun to watch, most efficient team, best home court advantage. Chelsea Gray wins best point guard, best passer, best leader, best basketball IQ, and the person who will make the best head coach someday, Asia Wilson, wins the preseason pick for WNBA IKEA MVP. Best center, best defender, best interior defender. So they won a lot. And then, of course, they won Becky Hammon, won best coach. And then Asia came in second, too. If you were starting a franchise today, who would you sign? And Caitlin Clark got number one. That's for a lot of reasons. That's for marketing and basketball. Asia Wilson got number two. Elliot Boston got number three. So if you are the Indiana Fever, you gotta be thinking, well, actually, the Indiana Fever did win 100% of the vote for the best young core, which was the Fever, because they have two of the three players the GMs would sign as starting their franchise. There's 16 teams, or it's 14 teams. So Caitlin Clark got 7 votes, Elliot Boston got 1 vote, and Asia Wilson got the other 6. So the core you want is the Fever core. You got the back-to-back number one overall picks in Indiana. So they're going to be very excited to watch. But now, up next to the NFL and talk about what's going down with the Shield. Welcome back into the show, and now we're gonna jump into the NFL rather quickly about what's going on down there. Schedule releases slowly, you know, networks are slowly telling us our big opening games. We're kind of getting bits and pieces of the schedule. I think the big schedule release is either today or tomorrow. We'll get everybody's schedule, full schedule, all 17 games for every team. And then, of course, a few months from now, I'll do my annual sit down. Why spend way too much time? But I sit down and pick every single record. And I know there's a software I can put that in. But I sit down, I print the whole schedule out, and I sit down with a pen and paper, two pens and paper, and I do every single game and every single record and who does what. And I go to the playoffs, and it's a whole thing. And it's nerdy for a lot, but it's fun for me, right? And I enjoy it, right? It's a fun time. So schedules are leaking out, quote unquote, right? And the Chiefs have back-to-back big weeks. The Chiefs open the season, Thursday night opener, with, of course, they're the defending champs. They open up the NFL season on Thursday night at home. And they draw the Baltimore Ravens. So they get an AFC title game rematch, game one. Let's go. Let's do it right now. Let's go. They're gonna decide. They're gonna go. I mean, they may lock up home field advantage by week two. Why? Because in week two, they host the Bengals. So they're in a position where they could put a chokehold on home field advantage by week two. If they beat the Bengals and the Ravens, that means that's two people in their thing they don't have to worry about. Which means they have the Bengals and the Ravens. They have the AFC North as their conference, as a division this year. That ain't great. But no, because you draw a cross. It might have been random. I don't know. But regardless, they got the Ravens and the Bengals to open up their season. So they could put a legitimate chokehold and stranglehold on the AFC home field advantage by week two if they knock out the Bengals and the Ravens. Conversely, they could be staring at football near impossibility if they go down, if they're down 0-2 after week two. The Ravens get them, then the Bengals get them. They could be 0-2. And 0-2 teams traditionally don't make the playoffs. It happens, but it's rare. And so that'll be something to definitely keep our eye on. Is the Chiefs opening up with those two games. Of course, Friday you have the Eagles hosting in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Just the coolness of that, like go play football in Brazil. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I know like always going to be in Brazil, like hanging out, and then they get to go play a football game in Brazil, which is something that no football player ever dreams of, because who plays football? Who plays American football in Brazil? Literally no one. So that's pretty cool for the Eagles. And I forgot who they're playing. I think it's the Packers, I want to say. But I forgot who they're playing. But they're going to play their opening game in Brazil. That's pretty dope. And then, of course, the NFL full slate. Tom Brady's first game will be a Dallas Cowboy-Cleveland Brown game. That'll be his first game as a broadcaster as part of his 10-year, $325 million contract to be the lead guy for Fox. So that'll be his first game. Of course, you know, Tony Romo's the lead guy for CBS. The Niners open up primetime, I think Sunday night football primetime, against the Jets. So they will host the Jets. Aaron Rodgers comes back on primetime. Last time we saw Aaron Rodgers, it was in primetime on 9/11. He ran out in New York, well, New Jersey, but home in New York, holding the American flag. It was a big moment. It was, everybody was cheering and crying. And then four plays later, he's being stretched off with a torn Achilles, and it's over. So, hopefully, we don't have that. And he goes at San Francisco to open it up. So, that's going to be intriguing. And so, that's kind of the games we have leaked out so far. We'll definitely keep you guys updated on more leaks if and when they were to occur. So some news, contract news, big dollar news. The Detroit Lions continue to pay people. They agreed to a 4-year, $212 million contract with Jared Goff with $170 million guaranteed. $212 million is the largest contract given in Detroit Lions history. It is the second largest per annual value contract in the NFL. And the $170 million guaranteed is the largest guaranteed contract by long margin with the Detroit Lions franchise. So they continue to pay. They paid Penei Sewell. They paid Amara. They paid Penei Sewell high in the market. They paid Amara high in the market. Now they're paying Jared Goff high in the market. I don't think there's any top contracts, but they're all right there. And so congratulations to the Lions for locking down this core. And then the Buccaneers, of course, they continue to spend as well. They paid Mike Evans. They paid Baker Mayfield. They paid somebody else. I can't think of who it was right now. And Carlton Davis, I think, got a bag. And now Antoine Winfield gets his bag. 4 years, $84.1 million. It is the biggest ever for a safety in the history of the NFL. He also gets the most guaranteed money. He gets the most dollars for a DB in the history of the NFL, and he's the most guaranteed dollars for a safety in the NFL history. So another big contract in Tampa. They've been spending a lot of money this offseason, but they are trying to make sure that they do not fall off a map and they keep their good core together as well. And then my last one, the NFL, is an anonymous coach for the Bears came out slandering Justin Fields, saying that it was bad football to watch, and Justin was trying to see everything at once and saw nothing, and just a bunch of slanderous stuff, right? And it goes back to what I was saying about Caleb Williams, a little bit about Caitlin Clark and Justin Fields in previous podcasts. It feels like a concerted effort to make Caleb Williams look good and Justin Fields look bad. It feels like they're going out of their way to say, okay, Caleb's the guy. We're going to give Caleb all the weapons. We're going to give Caleb the system. We're going to give him the coach. Oh, why do you give him Justin Fields? Well, Justin Fields sucks. So there's that. Like, it's kind of the environment that they're giving. And they can say this, especially when no one ran to trade for Fields. He went for, like, a condition, like I said, conditional sixth. Like, it's not like the league beat down the door of the beat down door of the Bears, like, please trade with Justin Fields. It didn't happen. So now you're in a kind of a power position where you can say and do almost whatever you want regarding his time in Chicago because you're backed by the market. So that is definitely, I don't think it's okay. Dude kind of jacked up. I think if you're going to say it, put your name on it. And I've always felt that way about anonymous bashing quotes. Like, you're bold enough to say it, put your name on it, bro. Like, period. But that is definitely something to keep your eye on there. But up next, we're going to go to Jack's Hot Take, which is going to be college football is going to be the best it will be in years. Welcome into Jack's Hot Take. And my take simply is that college football will be the best it has been in years. Period. Regardless of how you feel about college football, this is going to be the best it's been in years. Last year was the year the quarterback play. This is going to be the year. This is the realignment year, people. This is the year of realignment. This is the year that we get all the alignment news and all the hoopla that we talked about and all the noise that we heard for years. Again, I'm old enough to remember the Pac-16. Like, I remember that when the Big 12 was supposed to die. I remember, like, how the Pac-12 died. I remember it. Like, the Big 12 was supposed to die. It got to the point where it was like the NCAA basically stepped in, like, you can't kill a Power 5 conference. Like, figure it out, like, but you're not doing that. And that's when the Pac-12 and the Mountain West started doing stuff, and it got tricky, right? This time, Alex Cool said, F that and F you, we're gone. And so the Pac-12 is dead. And so you get stuff like USC, UCLA, and Oregon are now in the Big Ten? Whoa, Colorado's in the Big 12? Wait, Texas and Oklahoma's in the SEC? Wait, the ACC could be dissolved? Wait, what's happening? Like, that's kind of how it's feeling. It was like a whole summer of just pew, 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 everybody's going everywhere, and all these Pac-12 schools jetted. Like, there's two Pac-12 schools in the ACC. So, that cross-conference travel is going to be, cross-country travel is going to be insane. You know, like a local time California team maybe in a conference game on the East Coast and playing at 9 a.m. Like, it's going to be wild, right? And it's going to be so great. It's going to be amazing. Like, Texas and Oklahoma's in the SEC. Like, I don't think you understand. Like, that's insane. Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Texas, and Oklahoma are in the same conference. Like, just listen to those brands again. Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Texas, and Oklahoma are in the same conference. That's not even including what Texas A&M got money-wise. The sleeping giant that is Florida. Auburn's right there. Arkansas every 4 to 5 years puts out a good team. Missouri's never awful. They're bouncing up. Like, that's a conference. The Big Ten. Michigan. Ohio State. Michigan State. Iowa. USC. UCLA. And Oregon are a conference. That's ridiculous. Like, so every week in the Big Ten, every week in the SEC, you're going to have to go to war to get out. Plus, there's a 12-team playoff. The first round of the playoffs are on home sites. Are you kidding me? So you're telling me that LSU could host Michigan, that's just say, in the first round of the playoff in Tiger Stadium at night in November? Are you kidding me? Or December, really? Are you, like, that's ridiculous. Alabama could have to go on the road to USC late December in LA for the playoff. Texas hosts two-loss Oregon. Let's say Oregon has an off year. Two-loss Oregon goes down to the DKR Memorial in late December around Christmas time. And it's snowing sideways because it's Texas. Like, this is insanity what this could be, right? And so just the endless possibilities, the fun, the drama. The opening weekend's great. You got North Dakota State and Colorado. You've got USC and LSU. You've got Florida, Miami. You've got Notre Dame and Texas A&M. Like, the brands and the beauty and the pageantry and the awesomeness. And you've got two more teams chanting SEC. And you've got the Big Ten saying, no, we ain't bowing down to nobody. And it's just, like, Chip Kelly left UCLA as the head man to go OC Ohio State. And now they're in the same conference? Like, what is this? A&M goes to the SEC to escape the shadow of Texas. Now they share a conference with Texas again, so all their advantages are gone. It's wild, right? It's insane. And I cannot wait for it. It's going to be the best college football has been in years. I'm trying to even think of a good time to put it in. Late 2000s, early 2010s. At least 10 years. Like, it's going to be in so much fun, right? Every single week with these matchups, and I cannot wait for it. But that is all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoy this Insta-release show. It's one of my rarities that I get, although they probably come a little more frequently just because it's going to the summertime. And so I have a little more time on my hands with school winding down. So I'll be able to talk to you guys a little bit more on the Insta-release style Tuesday after practice kind of thing, or Wednesday after practice kind of thing. You'll get a Baker High football update, and you'll get so your usual sports updates as well. So I hope you guys enjoyed this pod, one of our longer ones we've had in a while, a little over an hour and 15 minutes, but it was well worth it with all the content we packed in. But that is all I have for you guys today. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.